Welcome to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr on Iowa Catholic Radio. Every Wednesday, diving deep in the truth of the Catholic Church and restoring all things in Christ. The Uncommon Good, live from the Mercy Live Up Studio.
The Uncommon Good is on the air. I'm Bo Bonner.
I'm Dr. Bud Marr.
We are coming to you from various parts of the globe. Bo Bonner, Des Moines, Iowa, where it is snowing. Mercy Live Up Studio. Bud Marr, Pittsburgh, Iowa. No, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. What's the weather like out there, buddy?
It's beautiful. I kind of wish you wouldn't have told our listeners that it's snowing outside because my children are going to hear that and they're going to be jealous.
Now, it is, when I say snowing, it is like 4 flakes per hour. So let's not overdo this one. But it is, in fact, snowing. We are coming to you through the miracle of technology, 1150 AM, 88.5 FM, 94.5 FM, streaming live, iowacatholicradio.com, and thanks to Blessman Ministries and the People's Abstract Company. If you have Iowa Catholic Radio app, you can listen to us from nearly anywhere. So, yeah, how's the week going, my friend?
It's going okay. I'm serious. My kids... Well, I don't know, like, when you don't know about a city, how do you get kind of an idea what it's like? Like, we just hear about these places, but I think when we moved here that my oldest Madeline had in mind, like, Pittsburgh was Buffalo, New York. So she's expecting to be, like, breaking out her dog sled by mid-December, and so far it's been pretty temperate.
That's right. Well, They make it rain with French fries, but maybe the snow is not coming as fast as you would like. So, Bud, one thing that we're trying to debut and really encourage people to do, if you were only in the studio here, you would be looking at a screen that if people want to, they can text into the show. They can text into the show, and they can tell us all sorts of wonderful things or... I guess, you know, yell at us if they want. But all sorts of wonderful things that we can maybe address in the show. So if you want to, text into 515-223-1150. I know that's usually what you call into the studio, but you can text. It will pop up on the screen, and hopefully we'll be able to get to your text. So 515-223-1150, text into the show, and as long as you're behaving, we'll see if we can make you a part of the show. Pretty scary, huh, bud? This can go all sorts of ways.
Yeah, there are a few friends of ours that I kind of want to keep that maybe on the down low, because I could see some prank text. But I know we're going to get to this in a bit. We have a great guest today, Mike Aquilina, and if you want to text a question to us, we can, you know, pass along your inquiry.
Well, as always, we are brought to you, underwritten by Cartridge World. Cartridge World out at 801 73rd Street, Windsor Heights, Windsor Heights, Iowa. Phone number 515-564-7400. As always, bringing you ecologically friendly, cost-effective, wonderful printing services. We always talk about the expense that it takes in order to make printing available to you, but Cartridge World makes it a lot cheaper, a lot better, a lot more friendly. So like you said, run over to Windsor Heights, and you can do your printing needs there. And then also brought to you by Mercy College of Health Sciences. Man, next week, finals. I know the students are scared. Are you scared yet, Ben?
I'm scared because I'm still adjuncting at Mercy, and I have a lot to grade over the next 10 days.
Yeah.
So that's my weekend is going to be like having the Army-Navy game on in the background and grading papers.
Well, we had the Advent lighting ceremony yesterday, so it was nice to get the Advent tree up, you know, because so few people are around during Christmas, we make sure to have an Advent tree.
Yeah.
Just to show you the sort of ingenuity and MacGyver-like prowess that you can encounter if you come to Mercy College. Our provost, DeWitt Jones, they had the main cord, which all the lights on the tree connected to, had a fuse box on it, which I didn't know that existed, but the fuse was blown. Yeah. And DeWitt's like, quick, get me some tinfoil! And he gets tinfoil, and he does something, and it works, and like the tree lights up. And those are the sort of wonderful people that you can be working with, under, above, before, next to, by coming to Mercy College. So mchs.edu, and you can start in spring.
Well, as a relatively young Catholic, I'm still kind of adjusting to the timing of Advent and Christmas. And in a previous campus ministry job, some students put up some Christmas lights there. And a priest who was on staff actually did kind of like a cleansing of the temple. It's like, it's Advent! He started tearing down the lights. So when I came on at Mercy College, you know, like you said, we don't see the students during the Christmas season. So we do the tree early, and I thought, like, do we still need a penitential angle? Like, maybe pour vinegar in people's hot cocoa or what?
Right. Good to know. Well, what we've done, so we have a Jesse tree, you know, and so we put up every day something that reminds us of the story leading up to Jesus. We put purple lights from Halloween, but we put the purple lights up during Advent, and then we take those down and put up you know, more Christmassy appropriate colors. So that's how we've broached that one. And I guess just to ask real quick, Bud, so did St. Nicholas visit Pittsburgh, or has he shunned that off of his map?
Oh, at the Institute, we do morning prayer, and I saw it was the Feast of St. Nicholas, and I was kicking myself, but St. Nicholas can still visit during the evening, right?
That's right. Like, St. Nicholas is a wonderful saint who can show up at many different times. Well, someone who's showing up very quickly, Bud, right after the break, we have the very famous writer of many books. He writes so many books, it puts all of us to shame. Mike Aquilina, he has over 40 of them, Bud. I mean, I don't have any. I think you have one, right?
I have one on the way. Yeah, Mike, I don't know. I was at this writers group on Monday, group of writers that meets in Pittsburgh. And this is kind of like what you read Mike about, you know, like with me, it's like, Bud, you should probably lose some weight. With Mike, it's like, why do you write so many books? But he's prolific. And I guess, you know, writer, full-time job, it's kind of like when we met Jeff Cavins and Minnesota, right. And we wanted to figure out the barbecue angle.
Yeah.
I want to know how to be able to support my family just by writing. But I think it does take a lot of hard work, so I'm impressed.
Yeah, so Mike Aquilina, award-winning author, more than 40 books on Catholic history, doctrine, and devotion. His work's been translated to multiple languages. He's hosted 9 television shows, several documentary films, a frequent guest on Catholic radio. Like, then that's what he's going to do here. He has about 4 books that have literally just came out very recently, and I think the thread connecting all of them is how mundane things, a lot of the things we take for granted in the church now, are really fundamental in driving the history of the church. So it's going to be really wonderful to talk to him.
Yeah, I think looking at his most recent books, there's kind of this incarnational thread. You know, that the Catholic faith is not just a spirituality, but it becomes embodied in our lives, in our cities. So it's a great great connections with what we talk about on the show.
Well, it's going to be a great show, so stick around. We'll be back after these messages with Mike Aquilina. This is The Uncommon Good.
Thank you to Tumia & Sons for your support of Dowling Catholic High School basketball. Tumia & Sons is an Italian family restaurant with old country authentic Italian food. Enjoy the local atmosphere where you may even spot a priest, politician, or even Willie Farrell. Take advantage of Tumia & Sons bocce ball court with the kids while enjoying Tumia's homemade bread, pasta, and real Italian homemade desserts. Tumia & Sons is located on Southeast 1st Street, just south of downtown Des Moines and around the corner from Graziano Brothers. 515-282-7976. TumiaAndSons.net.
Hi, this is Tony Calumet, Executive Director at Iowa Catholic Radio. On behalf of myself and all of our staff at Iowa Catholic Radio, I want to wish everyone a very blessed Advent. Our hope for Christmas begins. Our year-end appeal is happening right now with letters mailed, and I want to thank you for your generosity in response to this appeal. We are hoping to raise an additional $45,000 on top of our goal of $50,000 to address the much-needed updates in our programming department and the infrastructure cost with our current tower. Please know that we are very grateful for every amount that you send to us. No amount is too small. As our Iowa Catholic Radio family, you are in our prayers each day. May God richly bless you and your loved ones.
Support for The Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies, including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts, 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com. We're back with The Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher. We have on our show today a very special guest, Mike Aquilina, who, like we were talking about before, has written many, many books, but he's had quite a few of them come out very recently. The Healing Imperative, A History of the Church in 100 Objects, The Apostles and Their Times, and How the Choir Converted the World. And we want to talk about the thread that unites all of these new books. Mike, welcome to the show, and thank you for coming on the air with us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good to hear your voices, Bo and Bud.
Yeah, I know that like you get to kind of run into Bud in Pittsburgh, but we actually got to see each other the last time. Oh, it was almost like two years ago, right? In Wichita, you were at a conference there.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And that was great fun. It was a wonderful conference.
And see, the thing that I have to say, you're very important. Like, I'm not on this show if it's not for you mentioning John Leonetti. I tell you that I'm moving to Iowa, and you go, oh, well, you got to talk to this John Leonetti guy. And that's how I get on his show, and that's how we have this show. So, Mike, we want to thank you for throwing out John Leonetti to us. That's got us speaking to you today on air.
Anytime I can throw out John Leonetti, I'll take the opportunity.
That's right. You throw him out, we throw him under, you know, just throwing John around. Well, no, so, Mike, beyond the fact of, again, very impressed by not only the volume, of course, of what you write, but the quality that you're able to do all of these things at once. Bud and I were talking about what's really the sort of underlying thread with your newest books. Like I said, The Healing Imperative, A History of the Church in 100 Objects, The Apostles in Their Times, and How the Choir Converted the World. Bud really pointed out the incarnational nature of it. I've been really harping on that things that we see as mundane as part of church life, like things we just assume, you know, we don't like hold, you know, we're not amazed that there's a choir. We think no doubt, medicine is around. You're really sort of showing the sort of enchanted nature and the sort of drive that these things provided the early church. So did you see a connection between these most recent books that you put out?
You know, mostly I just type. So I don't think about the connections too much, but right now, as you're pointing them out, I'd say, yeah. I mean, I have a fascination with history, but my approach to history is a little bit different. I'm fascinated by the ordinary. I'm fascinated by ordinary people and what they do with ordinary things. And that's why in our book, the book I wrote with my daughter, A History of the Church in 100 Objects, we tried to choose, whenever possible, objects of ordinary life. A pair of shoes, a parking pass, a pistol, you know, all of these things that might be, you know, locked up in a drawer or somewhere in someone's house. You know, it's just the stuff of life. I really want to understand the way people lived in history, and I want to see how Christianity revolutionized their lives. Because if we look at life the way it was before Christianity and then after, we see some profound differences, not only at the theoretical level, but at the very practical level.
Mike, when it's on my mind, I want to make sure I don't leave this interview without asking you. I saw in the preview for the book on church history and the objects of church history that you discussed Newman's desk.
Yes.
As a Newman scholar, I'm curious, what was your angle in looking at Newman's desk?
Oh, wow. Well, you know, what I wanted to get to in that chapter was just the profound influence Newman had, not only through the books he wrote, but again, through his ordinary personal apostolate of friendship. He touched so many individual lives, mostly through his correspondence, but also through his ordinary ministry. And his walking up and down the streets, I am so impressed by that. And once you look at the numbers, as we do in that chapter, you see that he personally, not only through his books, he personally influenced the conversions of thousands of people. That's remarkable. He had a long life, so he had many years to do it. But man, that's a remarkable thing. And I think it tells us how we should be living. You know, you don't need the pulpit that Newman had. You don't need the publishing platform that Newman had. You don't need the celebrity that Newman had. You can be an apostle to your friends, to your coworkers, to the people living next door. You can make a difference. As ordinary as your life may seem to you, God has a plan for it, and it's in a sense it's as important to the unfolding of history, as was the call of Abraham or Moses or anybody else. Those people are very important in world history, but you could be very important in the life of your next-door neighbor.
I think that's great, Mike. And, you know, when I first came into the Catholic faith, I'll be quite honest, you know, something like relics or some of the artifacts that the Church preserved, it seemed very foreign to what I had experienced in Christianity growing up. But I've thought more and more about it, and you know, it's on this show in the past, we've talked about the liturgy and how the Church marks time, and we've pointed out that if we give that up, the world is going to mark time some way. We just baptize it with the faith. And I think it's the same way with relics. You look at, I mean, Pittsburgh's a football-mad city, and you go into a restaurant and you see, you know, jerseys framed on the wall, and it's you almost have, like, first, second, and third-class relics. Like, this one's been signed by Franco, or, you know, and so I think this is a real opportunity, like you're saying, for evangelization to kind of reclaim this part of our Catholic heritage.
I agree with you, and that's the way we live everything as Americans. We just don't admit it. Go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You know, I would not be surprised one day to walk in there and see Jerry Garcia's skull, you know, in a case there. It's the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is a gigantic reliquary chapel. That's what it is. We don't call it that because people would be, you know, skeeved out by it. But it is. These things are important because people we admire, people who bring us pleasure, have touched them. You know, the Billy Joel's keyboard was there when I was walking in for the first time. So you know, this is really the impulse behind that. The faith is so wonderful because it celebrates the things that bring us pleasure. You know, you mentioned the feasts on the calendar. This is an amazing thing. You know, Catholics have a work ethic. We were made, it says in the book of Genesis, we were created for the purpose of work. But why do we work? We work for the purpose of leisure. At the end of the 6 days comes the seventh day, the day of worship and leisure and festivals, feasting. You know, that's why the Israelites wanted to go out into the desert. They wanted to go out into the desert to celebrate the festival. And they used the same words to describe their liturgy, service, as they used to describe their work for Pharaoh, you know, service or slavery. It's just a different kind of work. It's a beautiful thing that we have here. It's all the things that we love about life sanctified. That's the effect of the incarnation, and we experience it through the teaching of the Church, but through ordinary ways. Ours is not just a Sunday faith. It carries through in the week. We experience the liturgy when we go to work and we make our offering at our desk. We experience the liturgy when we sit down at a table with our family, especially on a Sunday, and we break the bread and we pray.
This is The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. We are speaking with Mike Aquilina. If you want to have us ask Mike a question, please text us at 515-223-1150, 515-223-1150. Mike, so this actually brings up, I think, a way to connect to another one of your books, because I was thinking about, you're talking about secular reliquaries, and there's about like every third bad movie or book about music in the 90s was about someone like smoking pot on Jim Morrison's grave or something like this. And they'll be all like, yeah, that's cool. And you're like, so why are we weird if we, you know, touch bone shards? You're like, it's completely different. We don't know how. But so music is another thing, right? This is on my mind because we just had a concert. The homeschool students here in Des Moines have a big, wonderful concert. Mrs. Jewell puts on a fantastic concert, so the kids were at that. And we really just go like, yeah, of course, there's choirs and people sing. That's obvious, Bo. You know, why is that an interesting thing? But I think your book will point this out, and I think people need to realize this, is on one hand, music is something that all cultures do in some way, but this idea of the power of the choir to really deeply form our hearts towards the praise of God, that's not maybe as universal as people realize, and the importance of the choir. I'm fascinated and very happy that you wrote an entire book about this, because, again, it's something I think people take for granted.
You know, music is the most effective delivery system for ideas that you want to be remembered. You know, if I want to tell my wife I love her, and I write a song, well, that song will remain in her head forever. You know, she can whistle the melody, and she'll remember the words, and she'll remember the emotion, the feelings behind those words. Music is a delivery system for emotion and ideas, and it brings about unity. Okay, if you sing a love song to your wife, you're strengthening that unity. You're strengthening that unity, and the church fathers knew this. But they also knew that music can have a negative power, and so the whole period of the Church Fathers is kind of an ongoing debate about the power of music and whether that power can be controlled in this way. So there were some of the fathers who were really skittish about using music, and they always wanted to discipline the practice of music, especially in liturgy, because they knew that music could be misused. But we see through what we have in the documents that music played a key role in evangelization. The people at that time did not have texts they could read. There were no mass media. There was no printing press. So you couldn't get the word out there in a memorable way unless you taught it in a song. So I think that that's the way the gospel spread. It spread as a memorable melody, as words you couldn't get out of your head, and that's how people came to know Jesus and came to remember Jesus and the gospel and everything that's beautiful about salvation. Christianity spread at a rapid rate, and I suspect that this was the fuel for that that evangelization that overtook the Greco-Roman world.
This is The Uncommon Good. If you have a question for us, text it in at 515-223-1150. Mike, what I'm guessing is, and I mean, I know this for a fact, and I know you do as well, many of the church fathers were well-versed in their Plato, and they had read The Republic, and yes. This question about the power of music, both positive and negatively, I'm teaching The Republic to some high schoolers, and that's one thing that really catches their eye, is this book that's ostensibly about justice and education. They're like, why does he talk so much about music? And I think this goes down to your point, because Plato realizes that it's one thing to make an argument and try to be as dispassionate about it, and so take it or leave it. But the minute that you put ideas to song, they're attached to not only our emotion and our passions, but even just almost sort of in a bodily way, right? Music, I always joke around with people that... you know, when you look at like sort of like the Protestant Reformation or any sort of iconoclasts where they get all antsy and they want to tear down images because like they're sort of, you know, visual and they're making something spiritual, you know, fleshy and material. I always point out that every time you hear someone, they're touching you with airwaves, right? It's kind of right. It's kind of gross the more you think about it. So music really is like mind, body, soul, spirit, intellect, passions, all wrapped into one. And so the ancient Greeks were like, this is one of the most dangerous weapons we have, but also one of the most powerful. So I think that it's wonderful to hear that at the beginning of the church, our fathers were asking, you know, what do we do? How do we harness this? And what's the way we're going to do this? Because you can start to see how these different arguments turn out by, for instance, the difference between Eastern chant and Gregorian chant, like, but that sort of evolving understanding about how music gets the entire human involved,
right? And the other great source, I'm sure they knew Plato, as you point out, but the other great source for their unease about music was the Old Testament. You know, the Old Testament has a lot of positive material on music, you know, especially in the Psalms and in the histories where it describes the worship in the temple and how it was accompanied by various instruments and by singers and so on. And, of course, David wrote songs and he accompanied himself on the lyre. So there is that sacred use of music. But I'd say just as often in the Old Testament, you have the association of music with pagan rites. The cult prostitutes, mm-hmm, at the pagan temples, and the way they used music to advertise their activities. So there were also They also used music for in their sacrificial rites. They would use music to whip people into a frenzy, and also they would use music to cover the screams of children who were being sacrificed. So, you know, there are all these negative connotations of music, and the fathers were kind of pushing back against this. They were always very much aware that music could be misused. They wanted to use it for good, and so there was a lot of back and forth. And as you point out, different forms of chant, and also different forms of hymns, which kind of adapt themselves more readily to congregational singing, popular use. And it's left to Augustine at the end of the 4th century and into the 5th century to work it out theoretically and theologically. These are the reasons, you know, why music is good for us, and these are the reasons why we have to be cautious about music, but it can be sanctified, and we can move forward. And I would say that Augustine, especially in the West, was profoundly influential in the development of music.
So, Mike, I'm going to toss you a bit of a hot potato here, but this is what happens when you step into the octagon. Do you get into questions of what styles of music are best suited for the liturgy, or does the end of the book kind of cash out some of that history?
No, you know, I don't. I stop in the patristic era, and I encourage people to use what they see here to get inspired to make great music today. But one thing I found was that when you get into the debates about the music that's popular today, you immediately get into people's personal stories. And some people's conversions were propelled forward by hymns that I cannot stand.
Yeah.
And it's funny because one time I was giving a talk, and I was about to use as an example of treacly sentimentality this hymn from the 1940s that we were always singing when I was a kid, all right? And I was about to use that as this example when suddenly the woman who was asking the question started talking about how profound that particular hymn was in her life, you know, and it made this huge difference. And so I stopped, and I didn't go there because I don't want to step on people's toes that way. And that's not what my book was for anyway. What I wanted to say with my book is that we can think about Christian history as merely intellectual history, as just a procession of ideas that work themselves out through creeds and councils and debates conducted in an ivory tower. And that's wrong. That's wrong. That's not the way ancient history went forward. It went forward through the liturgy, through the lives of ordinary people living in ordinary neighborhoods and singing songs. It went out as a song from Jerusalem, and it took over the world.
What Bud's not telling you is he was trying to set you up to step on John Leonetti's toes, because we're having a debate with John about music. So you expertly avoided that trap, and you can be friends with all of us now. So you have obviously been doing this for a while, Mike. That was brilliant and beautiful. Yeah. Well, so we're actually coming up on the half-hour break. Are you free to join us after we get over the half-hour here, Mike?
Hey, if you'll have me, I'm here.
Wonderful. Well, we will. Folks, just want to encourage you, like I said, 515-223-1150. We're coming up on the break, but while you're listening to the commercials, perhaps you can think of a question you would like to ask Mike Aquilina, proficient author, particularly thinking about his most recent 4 books, talking about the incarnational, everyday, mundane lives and how it is that the story of the gospel charges these things with inestimable grace. So like I said, 515-223-1150, text in and we can ask those questions. This is The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr. We will be back with Mike Aquilina after these messages.
Hi, this is Trent Middendorf with Middendorf Insurance Associates. I've been working with my father, Jim Middendorf, for the last 11 years. We've been helping people with their insurance needs for over 45 years. Together with local companies like the IMT Group, we're here for your auto, home, and business insurance. Our number is 515-252-1414. We appreciate your business, and we want to wish you a Merry Christmas. Middendorf Insurance Associates. Are you really covered?
Hi, this is Tony Calumet, Executive Director at Iowa Catholic Radio. On behalf of myself and all of our staff at Iowa Catholic Radio,
I want to wish everyone a very blessed Advent. Our hope for Christmas begins. Our year-end appeal is happening right now with letters mailed, and I want to thank you for your generosity in response to this appeal. We are hoping to raise an additional $45,000 on top of our goal of $50,000 to address the much-needed updates in our programming department and the infrastructure cost with our current tower. Please know that we are very grateful for every amount that you send to us. No amount is too small. As our Iowa Catholic Radio family, you are in our prayers each day. May God richly bless you and your loved ones.
Support for The Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies, including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts. 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com. We're back with The Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr speaking with Mike Aquilina, prolific author of books, putting us all to shame. Bud and I cry in our pillows at night thinking about how Mike is probably currently writing a book, and we're just hanging out doing nothing. But particularly, Mike, these last four, like I said, brilliant topics, exploring the threads between them, and I just think we've been having a great conversation. So again, thanks for joining the show.
I'm just so pleased to be here and to talk with you guys. I'm so impressed by the work you guys do. One thing I like is that you live the life that I'm just writing about. You know, you both are living an apostolate of friendship. That's pretty cool. You know, I'm following Bo on Facebook since he moved out to Iowa, and I just see how he's involved in the lives of so many people on so many levels, and he's living this life we're talking about. And Bud, I have you here in Pittsburgh, and I keep sending my friends your way, and you keep helping them, and I'm very grateful for that.
Well, that was worth the $20 that we sent you to talk nice about us.
You guys kind of wax nostalgic about your first meeting, but Mike, I heard Bo tried to rope you into a little debate, and I just want to say,
oh, right.
if Bo debates you, that means he's got deep respect for you. You have to be worried about your friendship if he won't argue with you.
I was trying to persuade him that I agreed with him, and I wasn't succeeding.
That's right. That's, you know, that you're a friend of Bo Bonner when I'm trying to point out, when I'm trying to argue that we don't agree. So, 515-223-1150 if you want to throw more gasoline on this fire to see which direction it goes. 515-223-1150. So we talked about we've talked about the 100 greatest the 100 objects book. We talked about your book about the choir. You had the most recent one is about the healing imperative and sort of the early church and the invention of medicine. And, you know, that's one thing that, again, if we would stop and think about how crazy it is that we all assume medicine will be there. And I'm not trying to, like, belittle the difficult questions about health insurance and how much it costs or anything like that. But just the fact that we assume, like, if I have a problem, I can go get medicine, that doesn't happen for most of human history. So with your book, is that one of the things that you're trying to press, is that the idea that we're out there looking for the sick and those that have problems and trying to heal them, that this really is a sort of new venture in the world that Christianity brings, that medicine is not just something that the rich might sometimes have access to, but this is an active thing that an entire community is trying to seek.
Absolutely. And, I'm much influenced by the historian Gary Ferngren, who's probably the foremost living historian of medicine. And in his most recent book, he is emphatic about this. And I'm just going to read you a quote from his book because it's so good. He says, "The hospital was, in origin and conception, a distinctively Christian institution. rooted in Christian concepts of charity and philanthropy. There were no pre-Christian institutions in the ancient world that served the purpose that the Christian hospitals were created to serve. None of the provisions for health care in ancient times resembled hospitals as they developed. And that's such a powerful statement. There was no such thing as a hospital before Christianity came along. No one had ever tried this. The Babylonians, the Chaldeans, the Egyptians, the Assyrians, they had advanced civilizations. The Greeks, the Romans, they had more advanced civilizations. They did not create hospitals. Only Christianity created the hospital. And Christianity came along with certain ideas, and I say that these two ideas are, you know, the healing imperative and also the imperative to hospitality, that we have to welcome all and that we have to serve all.
Go ahead.
No. So the Christianity introduced this idea, but it didn't introduce it as an idea. It introduced it as a practice in the third century.
So this, of course, this practice is very important for me, for Bud. Mercy College of Health Science here in Des Moines, who I work for, who underwrites our show, the healing imperative, as it were, is exactly what we're about. And what's funny is I was in a discussion, doesn't exactly matter who all was in the room, but I was trying to talk about the importance of our Catholic identity for Mercy College. And people were like, well, you know, to cut the story short, they were thinking that it was like more this like demographic thing, like, oh, I'm just trying to say, you know, Irish and Italian people welcome or something like this. And I was pointing out, I was like, well, look, you know, universities and hospitals were invented by the church. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's just the simple case. So when you have a university that's about, you know, getting people the sort of careers and calls that will help you staff a hospital, you can't get more Catholic than that, really. And this has to be a part of our identity in the college, but also what we tell people. And I cannot tell you how many people go, oh, I didn't realize that. They didn't
there
realize that the church, that universities came up in the womb of the church, and that hospitals, I guess they just assumed, you know, like the world was created out of magma and there was a university and a hospital there. But no, I mean, it comes from us.
It does. It does. And I raise the question in my book that the hospital arose only within Christianity, you know, and I raise the question of whether the hospital and all it stands for can survive in a post-Christian world apart from Christian principles. I tend to doubt that it can. If we look at the way the hospital arose, the first instance we have of it is really the way Christians banded together to treat the sick during the worldwide epidemic in the middle of the third century. And the most abundant records we have are from Carthage in North Africa, and because of the correspondence of St. Cyprian. And Cyprian is telling the people, he's telling them, serve everyone, regardless of their religion. So he's telling the Christians, don't only serve the Christians, don't only heal the Christians, don't only bring chicken soup to the Christians, but the pagans as well. He's asking them to bring chicken soup and take care of the pagans who were persecuting them. That's remarkable. To bring medical care to their neighbors who were their persecutors and who were trying to be their enemies. So it's a remarkable thing, this universal idea of hospitality and this idea that the healing of Christ should be extended through history and extended to everyone, regardless of their circumstances, regardless of what they believe, even.
You're listening to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Bud Maher. If you'd like to trap our guest, Mike Aquilina, or Bo, you can text a question or comment at 515-223-1150. Mike, with this book, you know, the name of the book is The Healing Imperative. When I look at the description, it says, now more than ever, the compassion of Christians is needed to guide the world of medicine. With this title, it sounds like there's a kind of urgency with what you're writing here. Like there's sort of a concern lingering in the background. What did you have in mind with that?
I had in mind my sister Mary. My sister Mary is a wonderful woman, and she's been working as a nurse for decades, and for most of her career, She worked in the emergency room. And in the last few years, they started instituting a clock, essentially, that monitored how much time you spent talking to patients. Now, Mary is working in an emergency room for all these years. In an emergency room, most of the people you see are in a state of crisis. Something terrible and unexpected has happened. You have to calm them. You have to calm their parents. You have to calm their children. You have to calm the people who took them in. Mary's very calming. She's that way with me, too. She's that way in my life. But Mary decided to take early retirement. And when I asked her why, she said something really revealing. She said, I didn't feel like I was giving medical care anymore, that they had taken the care out of it. She put the emphasis on the word care. They were doing medicine of a fashion, but they weren't really giving caritas. They weren't giving care to the people who came in. So Mary took early retirement, and she volunteered at a free clinic and that's run by the Diocese of Scranton, and she feels very fulfilled now because she's giving medical care once again under the auspices of the church, because the church doesn't set a timer on the love that you show your patients. That's what I was getting at with this book. I was trying to show what was the impulse behind medicine in those first centuries when the hospital arose.
Well, I think that this dovetails, you know, great into the fourth book that we want to talk about today on the show, The Apostles and Their Times. You know, I was teaching I'm teaching a New Testament class this year, and you know, the one of the hardest bridges to cross with your students is to convince them that the first century world is in many ways an alien world. I mean, there's obviously things that all human beings, you know, that persist throughout all times, and there's ultimately human questions. But there's also ways in which the world that the apostles were living in, that we need to stop acting like we're as familiar with them as we were. So, you know, there's a way in which, you know, we've talked about in this interview about mundane things, everyday things, but there's also a way in which the everyday was a very different sort of day in the first century, and maybe understanding that world would make Jesus's ministry make more sense, would make someone like St. Paul make more sense, make medicine in its sort of emergent quality make more sense. With this book, is that what you're trying to, you know, is there a way in which you're trying to let people know that they're entering into a different world when they look at the world of the apostles?
Absolutely. I wanted to give them the sense that they were there, that when they read the texts of the New Testament, when they read the Gospels and the Acts of the Apostles, when they read the letters of St. Paul, I wanted to give them a sense that they weren't looking at something obscure and relevant only to long ago. I wanted them to feel as if they could enter into those pages and kind of walk through that wall that separates us and suddenly be in the room where it happens. So they were, you know, they could be there. And so yeah, I tried to tell the story of a time when people were politically divided and religiously divided, and they felt these divisions very keenly. And Christ comes along, and he says he's only going to bring more division, but out of that division comes great unity, and not only a new civilization, but a new creation. He makes new things happen, but he's still using the same old elements of culture. And I think that in the generation of the apostles, you can see that transition very clearly. That's what I try to point out in the book, because I track the change through the generation of the apostles, through their apostolate, and through their passing on of the authority and the faith to the next generation, the generation we know as the time of the apostolic fathers.
Mike, I don't want to ask you to give away your whole book, but I see that one of the points that you discuss is why many portraits of the apostles show them as alike as a dozen eggs. Could you give yes. us a sneak preview for what was going on there?
Oh, yeah, well, sure. I mean, I try to get into the individual personalities and the differences in their apostolate, the differences in style, but also just the geographic trajectory, you know, the routes they took to get where they needed to go. We can think of them as kind of uniform, but look at the New Testament and compare St. Thomas with St. Paul two very different personalities, and yet they went in two different directions on the map. One went to India, and the other one went to Greece and eventually to Rome. And they did amazing things, you know, gathering many souls to Christ. So yeah, I try to get into the different personalities. I try to make them a little bit more vivid so that people get beyond the old-fashioned language that they encounter sometimes in the New Testament, and those old-fashioned images where all the apostles seem to look the same.
Well, so is there a way, you know, as we're beginning to wrap up here, I think that just being able to read these four books almost as a set, I'm really pitching your books here, Mike. They really do roll into each other. There's a way that if you want to get, like you said, your feet covered in the dust of the ancient world, that you've really tried to do this with four different ways with this book. But beyond reading the books, because, you know, you've talked about that this isn't, you want to talk about how not intellectual solely this is. There's obviously an intellectual part to our faith, but more importantly, there's the lived out, the incarnational, the everyday. So sure, go read Mike's books that are going to really help you with that. But is there practical advice that you would have for people, especially in Advent, in a way to make their faith more incarnational, that reflects the sort of incarnationality of these first Christians at the beginning?
Yeah, live the parish and live the liturgy. That's the way people lived in that first generation and in the second generation. The liturgy is a dominant concern of the Apostolic Fathers. Most of the letters, most of the documents we have from that first full century of Christianity are full of worries about the liturgy and how it's conducted. That's what we want to plug into. We want to be a people at worship. We want to be worshiping with the folks who live next door to us. The parish is so key to the renewal of the church in the world, and the renewal of our individual lives, and the renewal of our experience of Advent, you know, so that it's not just Christmas shopping season. But be plugged into the liturgy. If you're going to Mass every Sunday and on holy days, that's great. Maybe during Advent, go to Mass once or twice during a week. Find out where the Masses are in the morning or at noon, and get there, and make that extra bit of effort as you prepare for Christmas. In the liturgy, you're hearing readings that move you forward toward the big feast that we're about to celebrate, and you celebrate the feast all the more joyfully if you're plugged into that and you're feeling that movement, if you're being impelled forward. Live the liturgy, live the Mass. If you read the Apostolic Fathers, you're going to see that the parish in 107 A.D., for example, as it's described in the letters of Ignatius of Antioch, looks a lot like the parish you're attending today, has the same problems, has the same issues, uses the same worship.
Yeah, and I mean, you were talking about me on Facebook earlier, and you've seen some of my posts, and you're still friends, so I'm sure that you're taking this, you know, learning to be patient with loudmouths from the first century. They didn't have Facebook, but there had to be something where people like Bo were mouthing off, and people like Mike were still befriending them and being patient. So,
no, it's funny. You know, you have those you have differences in temperament and differences in expression even among the apostles, and we need all of those differences in temperament and expression in the apostolate today. We're not going to reach everybody if everybody's like me or if everybody's like Bo. We need the people that we have in all the diversity that God's used to make us.
Bo, it's the Feast of St. Nicholas, and didn't he famously punch a heretic? So there's hope for you.
That's right. I mean, if there's a diocese out there that is looking to fill heretic punch, you know, heresy punching, I don't want to move, but I think I can do a consulting business in that regard. Well, Mike, if people, so we talked about the books. I mean, I know that people would think, you know, Amazon and things like this, but where else can they go to learn more about you, or other places on the web that maybe they can hear from you, watch videos, anything like that?
Well, you know, if you're buying books, I'd say always start with your local Catholic bookstore. You got a good one there, and I'd say that's where to begin.
Divine Treasures. Yep, I was literally there the other day, and I saw your books on the new book list.
Yep, and my own website is fathersofthechurch.com. Fathersofthechurch.com. You'll find my books there. You can also find them at mikeaquilina.com, but nobody can spell Aquilina, so don't bother. Fathersofthechurch.com is the best place.
Well, so Mike, you secured a great website name. Like, I would think that one got gobbled up, like, within 3 days after Al Gore created the internet, but
I was there.
Yeah. Nice work.
Yeah, no, trivia then, because no one texted in. They still can, 515-223-1150, but since no one did, Aquilina, that comes from Aquiline, right? So do you know where, like, the history of where your last name came from? I was interested. I've always meant to ask you this.
Yeah, well, no, it's a very common name in all the countries that use the Romance languages. It's like Smith on Malta. It's so common.
Oh.
But it's very common in the Christian East. So there's a Saint Aquilina of Byblos. She was the Eastern equivalent of Saint Agnes. She was a child saint, and she's very much venerated in Lebanon today. So there are lots of other Saint Aquilinas. The name just means eagle-like, and we probably get it because of our beak. But it is a common name. My people come from Sicily, and a few generations back they were from Malta. And before that, the documents say they were from the East, but we don't know what that means.
Oh, well, fantastic. Well, thank you for letting me throw out the etymology of your name. Bonner in Norman means either good-looking, which can't be us, or it means, like, good folks. So,
hey, you know, I like that.
Good folks, right. Well, hey, speaking of good folks, it is always good to have people like Mike Aquilina on. It has been a blessing to have you on the show. I hope that we get to have you back at some point. It's been fantastic talking to you about your four books and just everything else. Mike, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. Anytime, just call.
Thanks, Mike.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
Well, Bud, I think we're all jealous now because you get to run into Mike. I'm acting like, you know, you were talking about Madeline was acting like Pittsburgh's like Buffalo, New York. Now I'm acting like it's Waterloo or something out here in Iowa. Like you just run by the old Quick Trip and see Mike just hanging out, drinking coffee.
Oh, yeah. Mike's a presence in Pittsburgh. Des Moines has better pho, but we have Mike... Eagle-like Aquilina.
Yeah.
I thought that last name was apropos of the show with our Eagle Screech theme song and whatnot.
That's right. Jeb is making sure that that is becoming a staple of the show as the Eagle Screech.
Yep. Well, I'm going to have to do some research on my own last name since I got to be prepared for that question.
Mar, yeah. It's not Mal. If it was Mal, if you were Ryan Mal, that would mean you were evil.
Oh
yeah, Mal is evil in Latin. So I don't know what Mar means. So especially up in Norway, right? That's where your people hail from.
Yeah, well, my paternal grandmother was Norwegian, but Mar comes from my dad's father. So I think there might have been a Welsh background there, but I'm hoping it means farmer or something. You know,
well,
like you said, not criminal.
Deacon Tony points out, and he's right, that like in Italian and then in Latin, you know, mar, you know, maris means the sea. But you don't seem like a seafaring person, Bud. I've never seen you on a boat. Are you scared of water, too? I mean, I know you're scared of other things.
I pretty much keep my feet on dry land, no more than 10 feet elevation.
Okay, well, that's good. Well, Bud, before we close the show, I wanted to wish you a happy feast of St. Nicholas. I know that you guys, you got your St. Nicholas present early. Scott Frost is going home to Nebraska, which shows that prayer works and God has not turned his back on Nebraska forever. So congratulations.
No, that was a good start to Advent, but I think you noticed on Facebook yesterday that I called a moratorium on Frost puns. It's getting out of control.
Yeah, but that only spurred like 40 of those puns, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, there were some middle-aged men who were ready with their puns.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there you go. Well, so, Bud, like I said, thank you. You have the Pittsburgh connection. I'm thinking, you know, usually cities have, like, sister cities in a different country.
Yeah.
It's going to be Des Moines and Pittsburgh are our sister cities, and they're like, you know, well, just
yeah,
a few states over.
In all seriousness, I want to pitch the show to the Pittsburgh Catholic radio station, you know, sort of like expand our boundaries. But I feel like we have to get the right interview. Maybe the Mike Aquilina interview is the one to go with. Because there's some of them, like the Best Of show. That's probably not like the foot we want to put forward right off the bat.
Like
be a bit of a curveball.
They'd be like, What's with you and cats and these kids that you keep rescuing?
Because I feel like Iowa Catholic Radio, like, tons of substance. It's got a little more flash than the Pittsburgh station. The Pittsburgh station, it's kind of like Gregorian chant, and they just, like, read addresses from the Holy Father and stuff like that. You know, I think our show would be a hit here, but we have to just decide the best strategy for talking to the production manager.
That's right. So have you run, you know, like the one quick trip you all have you ran into him drinking coffee yet?
Who's that, Mike, or someone?
No, the production manager at Pittsburgh.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think they're in Latrobe, Pennsylvania. It's a little bit off the beaten path.
I see.
I have to venture around whatever mini mountain, you know, is involved there.
Hey, okay, we're getting ready to end the show, but I got a first text. First text in the show. Whitney McIntosh, so cool. I am from Pittsburgh, living in Des Moines. I love the idea of sister cities. Well, Whitney, we have no authority whatsoever to declare it, but unofficially, we're going to declare Des Moines and Pittsburgh sister cities. Bud, do you agree? You're over there, right?
I hear, henceforth herewith concur and will... I think I'm even going to, like, manufacture a key that will unlock the gates to both cities.
I like it. Whitney, thank you for, you know, I think it's like, you know, in Parliament where someone has to throw out the idea and then we second it and we all voted on
it.
Hear. So.
Well, a Des Moines resident from Pittsburgh, I feel like this is providential. That's pretty cool.
Wait, oh, so, man, it's at the end of the show, everybody's throwing out. Someone now asks, what's wrong with Gregorian chant? We love Gregorian chant. I should actually point out, Bud and I both actually sang in the Scola here at St. Anthony. So we sing Gregorian chant. So, no, nothing wrong with Gregorian chant.
You misunderstood.
Yeah. And then Whitney says it has been declared. Okay, well, we're now getting looks from the production folks. You know, we got to stop the barrage of messages. Thank you all for texting in. We look forward to more texts next time. This is The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher. May Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, reign in our hearts, in our families, our city, our state, our sister cities, the nation, the entire world. This is The Uncommon Good. God bless, and we'll see you all next week.
The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher is heard Wednesdays at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. on Iowa Catholic Radio and on the official Iowa Catholic Radio app.